From the American Tobacco Historic District, this is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Maybe you love sports. Maybe you have a favorite team. Maybe you consider yourself a diehard fan. Well, there are fans, and then there's Will Blythe. For Will Blythe, watching a North Carolina basketball game is an experiment in hardcore insanity. It's hyperactive couch rage. He twists, he squirms, he yells at the players and coaches on the screen, and if the Tar Heels win, he doesn't feel happy as much as just back to normal, a situation he likens to drugs for an addict. After such a long addiction, he needs victories just to feel normal. Will Blythe writes about his affliction in a new book, To Hate Like This is to Be Happy Forever, a thoroughly obsessive, intermittently uplifting, and occasionally unbiased account of the Duke-North Carolina basketball rivalry. And as a matter of fact, he's the brother of one of our producers, John Blythe. And he joins us in the studio today. Will Blythe, welcome.
Thank you very much.
I'm glad the game's a couple days away so we can actually talk with
you. That's right. I won't be able to do that afterwards.
In a normal way. We are taking your phone calls this hour as well, 877-962-9862. If you think you're otherwise a normal and happy person and go off the deep end, either for Duke or North Carolina, we're willing to give us a call and talk about your obsession, your mania, 877-962-9862. Will Blythe is in the studio. I read your book, and I'm surprised. You look pretty normal.
Don't let appearances deceive you.
Well, tell us a little bit about this. This is what about, you know, North Carolina basketball turns you into a raving lunatic?
I think I wrote the book to try and figure that out, and I'm not really sure. But I think I started as a fan so young, the way so many people around here do, and I was probably 8 or 9 when I first started watching games with my parents, and for some reason, as you say so well. I became addicted to the game, and North Carolina won so much. They probably won about 75-80% of their games. So I knew that I was guaranteed an emotional high on a much better than average basis. So I think somehow that just goes into your bloodstream.
This is a safe addiction. Well, then there's fanship, there's loving the game, but there's something then about this particular rivalry, Duke-North Carolina. And you write about it. If you would, I'd like to hear you read a passage from the book on page 6. It's the first one we've got marked there. Will you talk really about the, not so much the basketball rivalry, but what it is that in people's perceptions separates these two schools and what in this part of the world would make that rivalry so exquisite?
Yes, indeed. Well, let me read that passage. The answers to your question have a lot to do with class and culture in the South, particularly in my native state, where both universities are located. Issues of identity, whether you see yourself as a populist or an elitist, as a local or an outsider, as public-minded or individually striving, get played out through allegiances to North Carolina's and Duke's basketball teams. And just as war, in Carl von Clausewitz's oft-quoted formulation, is a continuation of politics by other means, so basketball, in this case, is an act of war disguised as sport. The living and dying through one's allegiance to either Duke or Carolina is no less real for being enacted through play and fandom. One's psychic well-being hangs in the balance. What is behind the hatred, the collective ferocity? The solution to that mystery begins not with basketball itself, but with the universities in both fact and perception. The schools stand a mere 8 miles away from each other off 15501, the heavily traveled thoroughfare between Chapel Hill and Durham. Put two different notions of the universe in the same atom, as it were, and there's bound to be disturbances at the molecular level. In quantum terms, it's matter meets antimatter, but in basketball terms, it's Duke versus North Carolina. As Mike Krzyzewski once said, forget the Big Ten. We share the same dry cleaners. There is no other rivalry like this. It produces things, situations, feelings that you can't talk to other people about because they have no understanding of it. So while the two schools are geographically close, they're a world apart in just about every other way.
And those worlds really do have to do with North Carolina being perceived as the home school where local folks go and Duke as being the that carpetbagger school,
that's
stepping
right.
stone to something else.
Right, exactly.
So it's a way to play out this other drama. Now, you do, having said that, you grew up in North Carolina, so you're the Tar Heels fan. But you make an effort to get into the mind of the Duke fan.
Yes, Indeed.
This had to be hard to do for you.
I was really worried about it because I decided to go over to the dark side, as it were, and see how the other half lives. And that involved going over and getting friendly with some of the players, even the coach, and then, of course, the fans. And I did end up meeting a fan who is popularly known as Crazy Towel Guy, or That Crazy Towel Guy, Herb Neubauer, who lives over in Durham. And we watched a Duke St. John's game together, and I realized as I was watching him watch the game that basically he was me and simply another incarnation, as it were. And we got to be great friends, actually. He's a terrific guy.
See, that would be the scariest part for me because I would be afraid that I would see me in the enemy. And
it was a terrible thing, actually, because it really sort of shattered my worldview. It's much easier to hate a class and not an individual. And so here I was among the Dukies, and I was having fun. They were human, as it turned out. And
you've got this great moment in the book, though, where you're actually watching a game with him. It's not a Duke-North Carolina game, but it's a Duke game.
That's right.
And he's begging you to high-five him when Duke scores threes.
Exactly. And I think, he put his hand out after, I think it was first Melchione, maybe it was Redick, hit a three. And I thought, what am I supposed to do here? Can I actually give this avid Duke fan a high five? And then I thought, you know what? When in Rome, do as the Romans, or when in Durham, do as the Dukies. And so I slapped his hand, and it actually felt pretty good. We were sharing a moment, as they say. And, we went through the rest of the game watching it, and I found myself sort of two minds. For a while, I thought, well, it looked like St. John's actually might take that game. I got excited in my normal North Carolina fashion. But at the same time, I was beginning to feel this great sympathy for Herb.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was really disorienting. But we ended up having a great time. Duke won, fortunately for him. And then we sat around, as I say in the book, like two Civil War veterans, one Union, one Confederate. And it was twilight was coming on. It was actually a very sort of wonderful early spring moment. And I felt like, again, I felt this guy is a terrific guy. I never would have known it had I not gone over here and seen him directly.
We have to keep Truth and Reconciliation commissions away from this rivalry or you destroy the best in sports. You also talked to Mike Krzyzewski. What was that like?
Well, first of all, again, I felt like I had to sort of sneak over onto the campus and into his lair because for 25 years, again, as such a partisan Carolina fan, I had screamed at that man through the television set. And although I don't think he heard me, I knew I had done it. So when I went over to see him and we shook hands, I felt a certain sense of, I would call it guilt. And we then sat together in his office and we began to talk. And he radiates this intensity, which I think is what players are attracted to. It's very charismatic. But we ended up talking about people like our mothers. And as I say in the book, I had always wanted to make Mike Krzyzewski weep. And I had never expected to do it quite the way I did, which was when he started to talk about his mother, he began to cry. And so when you're sitting there with a guy who's crying about his mother because he's so touched by what she did for him, it's kind of hard to hate the guy. I mean, once you leave, that's another matter.
Yeah, yeah.
But right there in the moment, it was sweet.
Duke fans are human, too. So describe what comes over you, because it's a fascinating transition, it seems to me, for an otherwise rational and intelligent man, a writer, an editor, to suddenly descend into the chaos of foaming hatred.
Well, that's where the actual editor of this book saw me once watch a Duke-Carolina game. And I was on the floor at that point. My cheeks were covered with paper clips because I thought, I talk about in the book, how I have this this belief that has not yet been scientifically verified, I warn you, but that by assuming certain postures during the course of a game, you can actually affect the outcome of the game. And so at this point, the game was going so poorly for North Carolina, I had sunk to the floor, and unfortunately, my posture did not affect a comeback. But yeah, I don't know. I can't. It's one of the reasons I undertook this whole project was to try and understand why it was kind of you to say, but an otherwise seemingly rational person might be so insane when it comes to a sports rivalry.
Yeah, it's by the way, that has been tested in bowling, and it simply doesn't work. You can't move the ball by doing that, whatever the thing is when you're trying to get the ball over
right,
to the
little English.
Over to the, and the other amazing thing about this is that really hatred is as important, if not more so. It's hating Duke that's almost more important than loving North Carolina in it.
Yes, actually, I had discussions about that with friends of mine who are Carolina fans, and actually Herb, the crazy towel guy, also talked about that in reference to Duke, but that sometimes we're sunk so low in this rivalry that we can actually be happier sometimes when the other team loses than when our own team wins. But, I mean, that's our fate.
Well, I tell you what, we're going to talk to the crazy towel guy. We're going to get the two of you on together in just a moment and talk more about this rivalry on the State of Things, talking today with author Will Blythe. His new book is To Hate Like This is to Be Happy Forever. It's about the Duke-North Carolina rivalry and his obsessive love for the Tar Heels. And we're taking your calls as well. 877-962-9862. Tar Heels fans, Duke fans, you can call in and we can rant and rave. Or maybe we can bring about world peace on this program. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us. This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Sometimes the title of the book tells you all you need to know. Will Blythe's new book is called To Hate Like This is to Be Happy Forever, a thoroughly obsessive, intermittently uplifting, and occasionally unbiased account of the Duke-North Carolina basketball rivalry. But the book is about much more than just sports. It's about Southern identity, family relations, and other broad social and cultural issues the Duke-Carolina basketball rivalry represents. Will Blythe is with us today in the studio, taking your calls at 877-962-9862, and we are talking about the crazy towel guy, Herb Neubauer, whose name you might not know, but crazy towel guy you do. Several times during each home game at the Cameron Crazy student section at Duke, we'll start a chant, usually during a timeout. Chant is quite simple, just repeating the name, crazy towel guy, over and over again. They do that until Herb Neubauer, seated about halfway up behind the opposing team's bench, gets up and maniacally waves his towel. The fans go crazy. Duke usually goes on to win the game by a wide margin every time he does it. Herb, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here, Dave. Hey, Will, how you doing?
Hey, Herb. It's good to hear your voice.
Listen to this. They're greeting each other in a warm and friendly way. Herb, tell us the story. How'd you become the crazy towel guy?
Years ago in 1984, and I hate to take this away from Will's book because he quotes it pretty good. I was traveling to the with Duke basketball team. We were in Southern California, Los Angeles. We had a day off. And we went to Tijuana, and I happened to see this guy with selling this blue leather hat, Mexican hat, and I bought it. And from then on, I wore it to every Duke game till 1994 when I had a fire and I lost it. But I sweated so inside this hat that I had started to take a towel and wipe my head. And after I had a fire in 1994, I still sweated in Cameron, so I'd take my towel and I'd wave it. And during that time, then the students started to notice me more and more, and finally they started to cheer, crazy towel guy, and I'd get up and wave the towel. And in 1997, they went as far as, we sold $25,000 worth of towels for the North Carolina Food Bank. So we
wow.
did something, you know, really good, too.
That's
so
great.
It's sort of become a tradition there.
Yeah, but Will, get this. Now, not only are the students from out of state, but even the hat was made out of state. It came
exactly.
from Mexico.
Figures.
You know, but I've never been able to find another one. I'd like to, if I could find one in North Carolina, I've looked high, wide, everywhere, but never been able to find another one.
Herb, this is textile country.
Let me ask you this.
Now, you've heard us and heard Will sort of describe the difference talking about North Carolina, the homespun, homegrown school, and then those out-of-state or carpetbaggers at Duke. How would you describe the difference between the two universities and then the rivalry?
Well, certainly one's a private institution, probably more internationally known, and the other's a very good, you know, public institution, a good state university. So, you know, very good. And if you see that they keep raising the tuition rates for out-of-state students, they'll keep more North Carolina people at Chapel Hill.
Tell us about how you feel during a game. I mean, do you feel some kind of real transformation come over you when these games start?
Oh, of course, and it's even more so when Duke and Carolina meet, because that's the two best teams in college basketball, two best programs, and so you feel it. And I get excited any time I go to a game, or even if I, as Will would describe it, as I sit home and watch it and yell at the TV like he does.
You yell at the TV. You threw one out a second-story window once, didn't you? Tell us about that.
It was the unfortunate comeback that Carolina had on Duke. I couldn't take it any longer, and I wasn't about to see another loss on that TV.
On that TV. Well, that's not going to happen. So what did you think when Will called and said he wanted to chat with you and explain what he was doing?
Before the Duke-Carolina game. I was out in front of the camera, and the crazies were starting to go in. And I was getting as crazy as they were, and Will happened to come up to me and tell me that he was writing a book on the Duke-Carolina basketball rivalry, and I handed my card and said, really don't have time today, but I'd be glad to talk to you some other time, and he got in touch with me and happened to come by, and we enjoyed watching the Duke-St. John's game, though it was not one of Duke's best games of the year, but they did win. That's the important thing.
What did you think of the book?
I enjoyed the book. I think if you'd written it from another perspective, probably from a family that raised, cheering for Duke, and even in North Carolina, you would have felt the same thing. It goes deep in our bones, whether we cheer for Carolina, whether we cheer for Duke, or even if we're a State or a Wolfpack fan, and I always admire people who cheer for their school, because I think that's the important thing of it all.
Is it too much to ask you two to wish each other good luck? Big game coming up this weekend.
Oh, it's a big game, and I think if Carolina could somehow win, they would not let Duke forget it. And yet last year, Carolina was a national champion, but little do people ever say, but they were sure lucky to beat Duke twice last year.
Well, and if Duke actually wins the game on Saturday, I will be happy for Herb.
Well, you heard it right here on The State of Things. Herb Neubauer, the Crazy Towel Guy, thanks for talking with us.
All right, good luck in that book too, Will.
Thanks
know it's going to be a big seller.
Thank you, Herb.
All right, bye.
Talk to you soon.
877-962-9862 is the number to call. So there is this fraternity among fans, this sense that at least we're loyal and fanatical about something. We've got that in common, huh?
I think so. I think that was one of the revelations for me, was the extent to which we were all sort of had exactly the same sorts of predispositions.
877-962-9862 is the number to call if you want to talk to Will Blythe, who is the author of the book To Hate Like This Is to Be Happy Forever. Kelly is on the line. I'm sorry, Chip is on the line from Chapel Hill. Hi, Chip.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Chip.
I just wanted to touch on something earlier that your guest had talked about, and that is the sheer euphoria a true Carolina fan feels when he hears or she hears that Duke has lost a game. And I think you'd be even surprised to see how fast the news spreads around town. And I just wanted to touch on that. And I'm going to hang up now. I was hoping you guys could talk a little bit about how ironic the team's colors, their personas of the coaches, and just all the symbolism that goes along with being a devil from, say.
I think you're a partisan guy, Chip.
Carolina blue, the southern part of heaven. Just the symbolisms that go on.
All right. Well, let's get some of that. Thank you for calling, Chip.
Thank you.
Well, I think the caller is right. I mean, it is kind of uncanny, actually. The sky is Carolina blue. Duke has that sort of dark, demonic blue. But it is interesting how the programs have, since Krzyzewski came in 1980, represented in some ways polar opposites culturally. They both have had incredible success on the basketball court, but and I think that's partly because Dean Smith and Krzyzewski seem to represent different points of view politically, different points of view just in how one conducts oneself on the court and so on. It's very interesting. I think it's a little less that way with Roy Williams at the helm.
We're talking with Will Blythe. His book is To Hate Like This is To Be Happy Forever. It's about memoir of a rabid Tar Heels fan. And you came by this through your family. Your father was certainly born and bred in North Carolina and loved the state. Your mom is a Yankee, and she seems like a bigger fan than Dad.
Don't call her a Yankee. she's made the switch. It is kind of amazing because she came down from Massachusetts. She's born in Springfield, actually, home of the Basketball Hall of Fame. It must have been faded in some ways. But she came down here to work, and it's where she met my father. And now she did become I don't want to use the word rabid because you don't want to use that word when you're talking about your mother, but passionate, let's say passionate fan, I think, than my father, and is right in there with me and my brothers and my sister in terms of her intensity during the games.
Yeah, in your description anyway, in the book, your father does have a deep love for things North Carolina, but he does have a sense of balance when it comes to basketball. On the other hand, Mom, we actually have a recording of your mother on the phone with your brother David during a Tar Heels game. This is when North Carolina was playing Georgia Tech earlier this season. Let's listen.
Carolina has the ball. If they can score. It's only 6 seconds left on the shot clock. Here goes somebody. He got it. Was that a three? Yep, 79-71. Oh, yes. Oh, Georgia Tech just stole the ball. Yup. Oh, me, this is what I call a barn burner. I like it to be up by about 20 points. Who is that? Woohoo! Golly, that was pretty good. Oh, my goodness. That was pretty good to come back from being down as far as they were. And then Hansborough ended up...
An eight-point lead with less than half a minute, and she's almost crying.
Her ideal margin is somewhere around 40 at that point. So, but we have this routine, basically, where generally I'm up in New York, and after every game I like to call her because... My father used to call her the coach, but we would have sort of post-game strategy sessions and so on.
She knows a lot about the game. Does she know much about basketball coming down here, or did she learn it all by watching North Carolina basketball?
I think she mainly learned it by watching North Carolina basketball.
Now, what it would explain, have you thought about that? I mean, have you thought about how she came to love Carolina basketball so much? Might be one thing to grow up here. But
it's, I think partly it's, it is a way of sinking in roots into a place. Also, I think, again, the fact that Carolina won so much meant that you had generally a really positive time watching the games. But I think probably it's part of just becoming a North Carolinian and a Southerner.
We're talking today with Will Blythe, the author of To Hate Like This is To Be Happy Forever. We're taking your calls at 877-962-9862. Kelly is on the line from Raleigh. Hi, Kelly.
Hi there.
You have a question for us or a comment?
Well, I wanted to just share a little anecdote. I was living in San Francisco about 5 years ago, and I wanted to share watching the Duke Carolina game out there. It's not really a sports bar kind of town, so it just happens that the Duke and Carolina clubs or alumni groups watch their games at the same sports bar. So when the two teams played, it was packed wall to wall. And you had the Duke fans on one side and the Carolina fans on the other. And you wouldn't really find that around here because people go to different bars. But people were yelling back and forth, and they started chants and songs. And you felt like you were at the game, and by the end it even smelled like you were at the game. it was so much fun. I mean, and people were ribbing each other and hooting and hollering, but at the same time, you know, there was kind of a common love of, you know, ACC basketball in Pac-10 country where no one appreciated the rivalry.
Thanks for the comment, Kelly.
All right, thanks.
I guess that's it. This travels fairly well. Are there more widespread fans? I suppose Duke may have more fans abroad than North Carolina. Do folks tend to stay here if you're a Carolina fan?
I think that's actually one of the dynamics of the rivalry, is that people that go to Duke are generally, not always, but generally passing through on their way back out of state. And most of the people, the students who go to North Carolina, stay in North Carolina. But I think Kelly is right. I've watched games up in New York at bars where one half was North Carolina, one half was Duke. And it was a lot of fun to shout insults back and forth across the bar that way.
And there's never no violence, just a lot of...
Not yet.
Not yet. So sticking with your family now, and again, talking about this sense of rootedness and I guess a sense of place that is one of the other features of this rivalry. Your dad certainly wanted to give you a sense of being a North Carolinian, and in fact, worked on your pronunciation.
That's right.
So, for instance, pronouncing the word F-O-R-E-H-E-A-D, let's hear it.
F-O-R-E-H-E-A-D. Yes, I know. Well, my father had us trained to say forehead.
That's how you say it here.
Correct.
Yeah. So if you ever came back from school, for instance, or back from, you know, your travels as a writer, and you said you folks instead of all y'all, you
could be. Yeah, that would have been a bad move.
Either getting in trouble.
Yeah, no, I to this day, I mean, it doesn't matter where I am, forehead, that comes out that way. The word F-L-O-R-I-D-A is Florida, not Florida.
Not Florida, Florida. Yeah,
that was barbaric. So, yeah, we had extensive training at the supper table in proper diction.
Well, let's take some more calls. 877-962-9862 is the number to call if you want to join us. MD is on the line now from out there and listening to us. MD.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I've just got one question for him. I noticed maybe 40 years ago that the Carolina supporters suddenly disappear for about 48 hours when they lose. Where did they go?
Ooh.
When was this?
It's been consistent for about the last 40 or 50 years. I've noticed it among my friends.
Oh, they disappear after a loss?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah,
I think, speaking for myself, I think I'm in such deep grief and mourning that I can't really go out of the house. I have to sort of close the curtains and just lie there for a while. It may be what other people are doing.
Thanks for the call, MD. Have you come to any great discoveries, any revelations about yourself as a result of this this probe of the fan?
It's funny. When I was hanging out with Duke players and fans and so on, I thought I was becoming a broader, more liberal human being, more compassionate. I felt sort of the brotherhood of man and woman. And but then... after about probably 2 or 3 months away from them, I found myself reverting to form. And I think TV is the great instrument in that respect. I mean, it really allows you to be partisan in a ferocious way. And I think not just in regard to basketball, but politics, culturally. It's a way to sort of, it separates you from the people on the other side of the screen. And
that seems to be an important feature in the human psyche. Do you think this is a defect, or is this something that we, you know, this sense of having to be partisan to the point of you know, changing your blood pressure?
I think it's,
what is that?
Yeah, I think I actually think it's sort of a defect of the current political culture. It seems again partly an inadvertent result of television, the way that we. Both take in information and argue, I think. And I just saw it writ small, really, in regard to basketball, but it's interesting. I totally have gone back to the insanity.
It is interesting, too. What do you think, things like sports radio, I mean, the fact that there's so much more in ESPN television, the fact that there's so much more sports coverage, and it's not just the game anymore. There's so much talk about the game and then about the players. And I mean, these guys have to build up something to prepare for the game.
Yeah, it's almost meta sports culture now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the age of the fan, and particularly in New York, sports radio is this ferocious form. It's a ferocious venue. People call up and are basically asking for a player who struck out three times to be executed. And sports radio seems, you know, part and parcel with the whole political culture also. But just this incredible discharge of animosity. It's very strange, actually.
How about here in North Carolina? It seems to me, and I, you know, from what I can hear, it's a bit more polite than what I hear traveling around.
I think North Carolina still has a culture of niceness, which has its own defects. But but I think people are a little kinder in regard to talking about sports. And in this area, I found that to be true in part because mainly we're talking about college athletes. And I don't think they're held to quite the same standards as professional athletes.
Well, but is that true even in sports radio around the country? I'm thinking that folks can get...
Folks can get angry about any sports matter now, but I think when people are being paid high salaries, it really brings out the ferocity in a lot of sports radio listeners because they feel if Alex Rodriguez is getting $124 million or whatever, then they're going to take him down a notch. It's almost required.
I'm talking with Will Blythe. His new book, To Hate Like This, is To Be Happy Forever. We're taking your phone calls at 877-962-9862, talking about the Duke-North Carolina rivalry and what it is to be a passionate fan. That is just ahead on The State of Things. Stay with us. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. We're joined this hour by Will Blythe. His new book is titled To Hate Like This is To Be Happy Forever. And we should point out that Will's brother John is one of our producers on The State of Things. Taking your calls this hour about the love of basketball and the need to hate the other guy, 877-962-9862. And Will, we've been talking about the Duke University of North Carolina rivalry, but the book is really about more than that. You write about coaches and players. In particular, Melvin Scott, you wrote about him. He was not a particularly high-profile player for UNC. What drew you to him?
Well, it's true he wasn't a high-profile player, and I think that's what made his story almost more interesting to me in a way. Because he was having to accommodate his dreams of stardom, which every Division I recruit has, with the reality that he was essentially going to be a bench player his senior year, which he had looked forward to his entire college time in college. But I was drawn to him because he was such a free-spirited, interesting guy and extraordinarily courteous. I talk about in the book how all these guys that are recruited for teams like Duke and North Carolina, they're like those Polynesian statues that are ringed with offerings. And they have grown up because of their talent being basically solicited by everybody. And as a result, a lot of them tend to think, I'm pretty hot stuff. Melvin was a guy who, while he'd been recruited in that way, still had this incredible decency about him. And the first time I met him, he offered me a hot dog and was just very gracious. And then as I met his family, and in particular his mother, and I saw why he came out that way.
Well, and his neighborhood, too, and I want you to talk a little bit more about that, his family and his mother, but maybe some of that humility came from his neighborhood in Baltimore, where every time he went back, everybody there knew him and had some advice for him.
That's right. Every time he went back to Baltimore from Chapel Hill, and I walked the streets with Melvin a few times, and random strangers would pass him by and say, "Brother, you got to start taking it to the hoop. You got to shoot more." They were used to him as a high school star putting up big numbers. And he felt the weight of carrying that whole community's aspirations. And at the same time, I think he was trying to escape that community. And it was a complicated position to be in. And I was really impressed at how gracefully he negotiated it.
And a remarkable mother who came through some very difficult times, had some problems with addiction and other problems growing up, kept the family together, and you parachute into this scene where they're all circling Melvin and right, trying to reinforce him and buck him up.
Right. I mean, his mother, Bridget Scott, is an extraordinary lady. As you say, I mean, she did have problems of her own. She was addicted to heroin for many years, an alcoholic. And she managed to start going to Narcotics Anonymous and pulled herself out of that life after really, I think, probably about 20 or so years in the life, as she says. But her children throughout that time remained devoted to her. She was a very good mother. In fact, she used to sing in the church choir while she'd be high on heroin with her children out there in the pews. So she was still taking them to church, for instance, while she was a junkie. But she's a woman of indomitable will, and kindness. And she's like a mother for not just her own sons and daughters, but for a lot of the guys in the neighborhood.
877-962-9862 is the number to call if you want to talk with Will Blythe, my guest this hour, who has written about the Duke-UNC basketball rivalry. Not an unbiased account in any way, although you made an effort
to
meet Duke fans. Let's go to the phones now. Kevin is on the line from Raleigh. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to say, you know, if you can say to hate like this means being happy forever, if you're an NC State fan, maybe that means being twice as happy. Since, you know, we as NC State people, we sort of rejoice whenever either of the two teams lose, for instance. And I think there's sort of a cultural difference here that exists among the three schools that you know, I'd like to point out that, you know, NC State is sort of, you know, the land grant school, the university of the people, and in a lot of ways folks associated with NC State kind of see Carolina and Duke as sort of the ivory towers at the other end of the triangle, the carpetbaggers and the local liberal types, I guess.
Kevin, I actually talk about this in the book because I think that NC State is to North Carolina as North Carolina is to Duke.
Sure.
And that I also think that, I mean, of course, you know, North Carolina State and North Carolina were the big rivalries in the 1970s. And Duke at that point was pretty much off the radar.
Kevin, thank you very much for your call. And it does raise the question, too, about why in this area where there are such good college basketball teams, there really isn't the same affection for professional basketball or as deep and as heartfelt.
Probably one, because the college teams are so good here. And then two, we didn't really have a professional team. I guess the last one we had in basketball before the Charlotte team was the Carolina Cougars back in the old ABA. And I think that team succeeded to the extent that it was a collection of ACC local guys. So I just think somehow college sports here were big, and even going back into the 40s, say, with football, and then the 50s, I think it's part of our identity.
Are you a little worried about all the money that is now part of college basketball and all the pressure that's on the coaches and the programs, that what is this kind of fun and exciting rivalry can soon turn into something at the national level? I'm talking about all college athletics. Mm-hmm. That some of that innocence has gone out and could go out.
I think it went out a long time ago. I mean, I think that's one of the great things about being a fan is you don't have to get too close to the inner workings, because when you do, it's a kind of disenchanting spectacle. I actually call it the sports industrial complex, but the amount of money that is devoted to college sports and the extent to which it's sort of separated from the universities, what you would think of as their primary mission, which is to educate people in the liberal arts and science and so on. What exactly did basketball have to do with that? Now, I love it as much as the next person, probably more, but it's just a strange thing that's happened over the last, I think since TV took an interest in college sports.
That's where the money was. And it raises another question, too, and that is, why is this rivalry between the basketball teams and not, say, the football teams?
I think Duke football is the answer to that question.
I just think it's not as competitive a program.
Yeah, I think that when both Duke and North Carolina basketball teams are so good that makes for the rivalry.
Let's go to the lines. Carol is on the line right now with a question or a comment. Hi, Carol.
Oh, I just wanted to say that the rivalry is not only between the men's teams, but the women's teams. My 12-year-old daughter, Rose, avidly follows women's basketball, and boy, it just burned her up that even though UNC beat Duke, we were ranked below them. And so it was very even sweeter when UNC rather decisively beat Duke again this past weekend.
Yeah, I think the women's rivalry now is fantastic. And I actually expected bigger stories in the local press after North Carolina beat Duke in the women's game just the other day. But it's a fantastic rivalry. And I think North Carolina, if I recall correctly, has won 5 in a row.
Are women becoming more avid as fans over time, do you think, in terms of the world of fandom, which used to be the men's strange universe? Women becoming more involved?
Yeah, I think so, actually.
I mean, not just involved or going to the game, but I mean, you know, sick. I'm talking sick.
We'll see with this generation if they turn out to be as sick as mine.
877-962-9862. If you want to join Will Blythe on the line now is Richard from Thomasville. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Frank. Hey, Will. I was just curious, where does the sense of entitlement for UNC basketball victories comes from? So many of the UNC fans I know seem to think it's just the natural order of things. It is their birthright to be victorious and win basketball games. And I don't see that. And granted, I'm a Duke person, I'm a Duke fan, but I don't see that. I see when Duke people lose, it's, well, we lost. So what? We'll come back next week and do it again. But when UNC folks win, it just so many folks I know think this is just who we are. We're supposed to win. It's the natural order of things. Where does that come from?
Thank you, Richard.
I think probably because it is the natural order of things. No, I'm being facetious. I think, but it does get into your it's biological system and the winning. And I think that when North Carolina went 8-20 in that infamous season, you did see some North Carolina fans falling away from the program, and that wasn't a pretty picture. I think they do expect the team to win, but my experience with Duke fans is that they've come to that point also. They've had so much success over the last 25 years that they expect the same kind of results.
That is an interesting element of fandom, though, isn't it? This sort of imputing to the other fan and the other team these characteristics that may or may not apply to you, but a certain different vision.
That's right. They become the other.
Yeah, I can remember when my brother came down to Washington, D.C., the Buffalo Bills were playing. He's a big Buffalo fan. He sits in the crowd with me, and we're watching the game. And he said, man, you know, your announcers here are pretty biased. I noticed that when they announced the Washington guys, they're real excited, but when they announced the Bills, you know, he was real low-key. I'm thinking, it's really what they do in every stadium, Tom. You just may not notice there up in Wilson Stadium or wherever you are.
Exactly.
877-962-9862 if you want to join our conversation. So what was the biggest surprise for you as you did the research on this book and did your interviews?
I think I had a few surprises. Of course, one surprise was how much I liked some of the Duke players, actually. They were terrific. And the most reviled, hated player in college basketball, J.J. Redick, according to Sports Illustrated and most people, turned out to be a really a very charming and interesting young guy. And I quite liked him.
You also compared, you talked with Dean Smith, and talk about him and Coach Krzyzewski and sort of the difference between those two coaches.
Well, I think first of all, they, I think, really got on each other's nerves. I think that Krzyzewski was a coach on the make when he arrived at Duke, and Dean Smith was king of the hill. So right away, there was that classic conflict between the elder, the dominant guy, and the guy who wanted to be that guy. There was that. And then I think they were so different politically. Dean Smith, classic liberal, supported the nuclear freeze. Is active even now against the death penalty.
He's
a Chapel Hill guy. And then Mike Krzyzewski is politically much more conservative, was actually in the Army, and has hosted fundraising events for Elizabeth Dole. And I think there was just some way in which, even with those two differences, I think there was also just something basically different about the two men and the way they conducted themselves in their deportment.
Talking with Will Blythe, who has written a book about the rivalry between Duke and UNC and his passion for the Tar Heels. To hate like this is to be happy forever. And you do talk about more than basketball and the rivalry. It is about relationships, not only with your place and with your family, and you talk about your father as well. And I'd like you to read a passage near the end of the book for us, Will, that kind of sums up that relationship and how when you put everything all into context and in proportion, this basketball rivalry may have a lot to say about us, but there are some other more important things as well.
Well, my father was a really, he died actually in December 2000, and he was he loved this place. He loved North Carolina. And anyway, the last portion of the book is a little valedictory to him. So it's called My Father as a Bird. My father loved birds, and in his sleep, he often possessed the gift of flight. He awoke from his dreams to tell my mother about how he had flown above the rooftops of our neighborhood, over the woods, past the plate glass windows of the contemporary houses set into the hillsides, above the dormitories and the classrooms, and the hospital where he worked and would one day die. Husband, father, professor, those were the requirements of his days. His nights were taken up with cavorting in the sky, swooping, diving, soaring, twisting, and turning free. "I wouldn't mind coming back as a bird," he told her on many occasions. "Zip around, swoop, swoop." He imitated a bird in flight, his lips pursed to make the sound. He studied birds, owned a shelf overflowing with manuals and guides. He knew their songs. At the supper table on the back porch on summer nights, he offered us money if we could identify the birds singing in the dusk. "Summer tanager," I usually said. I didn't remember the song, but I did remember that the answer to these impromptu quizzes was often summer tanager. I was already deep into basketball. Birds were birds. I liked them, but I didn't need to distinguish among them. Let 1,000 birds sing. In this, I was a grievous disappointment to my father. "You're guessing," he accused me. "No, I wasn't," I said. He kept the money. An old man who flew above the rooftops of a city in the night was less likely to be impressed by 18-year-olds with 42-inch verticals. He got up far higher than that. He could stay in the air all night. His hang time was forever.
That puts it all into context. Will Blythe, to hate like this is to be happy forever. And it does suggest that your sense of rootedness and a sense of place that gives you those relationships makes them more important to us. To a certain extent, the passion that we can feel, I guess, for even a rivalry like this is a way of also connecting with that. Not as frivolous necessarily as it sounds.
Right. I think it really is a way of finding a home and being at home. And so that the rivalry, there are times when I thought, oh, this is the most frivolous thing on earth. I can't believe a middle-aged man like myself is spending all this time emotionally consumed by this. But at the same time, there is something to be said for these rivalries and the way they give you a place to be from.
Thank you very much, Will Blythe.
It was a pleasure.
Will Blythe is the author of To Hate Like This is to Be Happy Forever, a thoroughly obsessive, intermittently uplifting, and occasionally unbiased account of the Duke-North Carolina basketball rivalry. He's also the brother of one of our producers, John Blythe. And he'll be at the Regulator Bookstore in, of all places, Durham this Saturday before the Duke-North Carolina game. That's the state of things for today. We have a programming note. On Thursday, we're going to offer a program on how we as a society value and treat our children, and we're asking our panel and our listeners to read a few articles about children and the job of parenting. Going to do a little homework this week, read a few articles, and learn more about our program for this Thursday. You can go to our website at the State of Things, all one word, stateofthings.org. This is North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.